Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery. Code Wondery.
It's 3 o'clock somewhere. Time for a My Mochi ice cream snack. My Mochi ice cream is cool, creamy scoops of premium ice cream wrapped in sweet, pillowy dough. And get this, all of My Mochi's fabulous flavors like strawberry, mango, double chocolate, and cookies and cream are only around 80 calories per piece. Talk about a guilt-free, indulgent experience. Each box of My Mochi ice cream has 6 perfectly portioned, gluten-free mochis that are great for grab-and-go. So feel good while curbing your afternoon cravings or the midnight munchies. Yeah, you know who you are with the joyfully chill sensation of My Mochi ice cream. Find My Mochi ice cream at Target or visit MyMochi.com to locate a grocery store near you.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 461. This is the first episode of 2014, looking ahead to bright days of hopefulness and harbors of prosperity that await you at various points for this brave new calendar year, for which we measure time with our trips around the fiery mass at the center of our solar neighborhood. This is the perfect episode to start 2014 with. This is Brody Stevens, who we've been friends with for years and years and years. Brody is an hilarious comic. I'll use the archaic article, and hilarious, for that. And Brody had a pretty public breakdown and came back from it, and he's working on it, and he's wonderful. He does warm-up for At Midnight and Comedy Central, and Zach Galifianakis, executive produced this show for Comedy Central called Enjoy It! And it started December 1st and ends January 5th is the last episode, but it'll be up on ComedyCentral.com. And it's sort of this comedy drama docuseries about Brody coming back from the edge of sanity. And we love him. And you should also check out his podcast, the Stephen Brody Stevens Festival of Friendship. And you should check out this podcast, which you're now currently listening to. So keep doing the thing that you're already doing. And then you can follow Brody on Twitter as well. This episode of the Nerdist Podcast was brought to you by Funimation Entertainment, North America's leading distributor of anime. We were in Las Vegas, a big group of us, me and Chloe and Granny Mahara and our friend Michelle Morrow and Nathan Fillion and his girlfriend Christina, and we all went to Otakon, which is a huge anime festival, a huge anime convention back east. And this is the first year that they launched it in Las Vegas. And so we went yesterday and had an absolute blast. And I, of course, bought a bunch of stuff. I keep buying patches at cons that I'm never going to sew on any clothing, but I'm obsessed with them. I'm just like a trinket squirrel where I just like rifle through and then just hoard piles of stickers and patches. But we met the Funimation guys, and they're bringing the season sets of Dragon Ball Z for the 25th anniversary to Blu-ray for the first time. Did you get an Xbox or a PS4? Well, great. Now you get Dragon Ball Z on Blu-ray. It's been restored. It's been remastered for the modern era, taking advantage of the technology and delivering an amazing picture for the 1080p and widescreen televisions. You can get the entire first season for as low as $24.99. And as a special offer for Nerdist listeners, go to shop.funimation.com and use the offer code Nerdist when checking out to get an additional 20% off when you get Dragon Ball Z Season 1 on Blu-ray. So thanks to Funimation. They were super nice guys. And thanks to Otakon for having us out to the convention. And now here's episode number 461 of the Nerdy Pod... The Nerdy Podcast.
Really, how many times have you been saying that word?
How's your voice over there?
It's great. I'm doing this on purpose. It's an exercise.
You have Vegas voice.
Oh, come on.
Vegas takes everything else away from you. Why not your voice, too, when you come here? You might as well just leave with your voice. you'll get it back as we exit the state line. They'll give you your voice back. I meant to say Brody Stevens on the Nerdist Podcast, and I said Nerdy Stevens on the Brodist Podcast.
Okay.
Brodist!
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Stevens,
you got it.
Welcome.
I feel welcomed.
You should be.
You should.
I've been in this room before.
You have. Who have you done? Did Pete's podcast?
I did Pete's podcast.
Did you make it weird?
It was fun. It was weird. I guess it was weird. I didn't make it weird. Pete actually made it weird.
He's very good at that.
How dare he?
What did you guys talk about?
I forget, actually. My memory is so bad. But it was fun. It was good. The feedback was positive. And I would love to come back. It was I can't remember, to be honest.
So you could go back and talk about the same exact thing again.
It'll be fresh to Brody.
It could be.
Yeah.
I mean, I do tend to repeat things.
Is that from a cocktail of medications that you have to take?
You know, you went right. I don't know. I've always been that way. I've kind of always been, just obsessive about thinking about things, like forgetting things. I already forgot. I am on meds, yes, Chris, and it's a constant battle. It's a constant, balance, and I'm going through that right now. I'm letting you know I'm detoxing. You might see. That's why, I'm flailing a little bit. I got to watch it, but I feel good, actually.
What are you detoxing from?
No, I'm just trying to, get off Klonopin. I don't want to be on it, and yeah. I don't think I need to be on it. I'm taking my Lamictal, which Dr. Drew said is a safety net.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't like being on Klonopin. I don't like the fact that if I don't take something for 2 or 3 days, my hands start sweating. I start going into withdrawal symptoms. Mm-hmm. You look up, and I don't want to do that. So I feel, before I get in too deep with it and I get, my body. Maybe I'm already beyond that. I just hear nightmares. I've heard it's hard to get off of, and then I'm feeling it. I mean, it's got to be related to it, because whenever I don't take it for a couple 3 days, my hands start sweating. I get a little tightness in my. I get a little, but it's withdrawal. You kind of have to go through that,
yeah,
and not stop. So you got to fight through it. So I think if I talk about it, and a lot of it's it is physical, but some of it's in my head too. You're bad. That's why I feel like stay the course, Brody. You're talking about it. You're not doing anything weird. You should be. You got to talk to your doctors, but my friends know. But it's just I'm not gonna. I don't want to be a guy who says pop a pill. I want to explore all avenues first, but be smart about it. I have a past. I messed up, so I gotta let people know what I'm doing, kind of. But I'm not feeling that great, what, maybe mentally or physically. I'm not exercising, so before I pop a pill,
yeah,
I need to exercise first. Maybe that's something I need. Not just exercise, but maybe a little therapy. But initially what comes to my head is exercise, so I'm not going to pop a pill in place of exercise. If I'm exercising and I still feel, I don't feel horrible,
yeah,
but I still feel the way I feel, then I'll consider, talking with my doctors and friends or whatever, maybe going back on a med. But to make that decision when you haven't explored the other, I'm not saying natural avenues, but I'm talking about therapy. Maybe yoga, hiking, the exercise. Then I'll go back to that. So, but I also feel like, I am going through, your body physically goes through stuff too.
Yeah,
so
withdrawal basically just from, I wasn't ever addicted to anything as heavy as Klonopin, but it was just smoking and booze. But I do remember that the withdrawal sort of feels like it sort of felt like a molecular hunger, where it's just this really deep, your body is telling you, I need something, I need that thing.
Whenever I've tried to stop smoking, I've always been cold turkey, and it never went well. I would just start sweating.
Yeah, I'm sweating. I'm going through sweats.
Yeah. You do that book that Paul F. Tompkins did, which is the...
I should do the book?
You should do the program that Paul F. Tompkins did, because Paul was a pretty heavy smoker, and it...
What did he do? He went to a hypnotist?
No. He read this book.
Oh, okay.
I can't remember what it's like. The natural way to quit... It was some sort of a quitting smoking book, and it doesn't... You don't quit cold turkey. It just sort of slowly weans you off it, and for... I mean, I had... Until just now, I had forgotten. Yeah, Paul used to smoke all the time, but this book got him to quit, and he's not smoked since.
Yeah,
we'll find out. We'll find out.
Really like smoking.
I don't know if there's the natural way to quit Klonopin. I'm not sure that's a book that you could.
Yeah, but a lot of people take it. When I mention Klonopin on stage, and I haven't been taking it. You know, more. I've been taking it maybe a year, and I only took it because. I was feeling anxiety. I was in a, you know, I had anxiety. I had fears, but those fears they've been documented fears. You know, I didn't like living in Hollywood. I was on different meds. So anyway, it brought out anxiety. And so I felt like I even researched, I brought it up to my doctor. Yeah. I said, could I try, you think Klonopin may help me? I read on about benzo. I can't pronounce the whole thing.
Yeah.
And she was willing, my doctor, she said, yeah, let's, if you're, you know. So she prescribed it, and I did feel better. Mm-hmm. It did. But I think part of that was me making changes in my life, you know, moving back to the Valley, adjusting the meds that I was taking. So I was taking the Klonopin still, and I was feeling like, you know, I'm really not, I don't have anxiety. I'm feeling good. I was taking that, you know, I was on the Oddball comedy tour all last, you know, late summer, and we were traveling around. And I was, stayed on my Klonopin, and then I wasn't anxious. I didn't have anxiety at that point. I was feeling good. And I don't have anxiety. Yeah, I feel good right now. So yeah. I'm letting you know, like, I feel good.
Good.
And I just don't want to be hooked on that stuff.
It's hard to get around the idea of like, oh, I have to, you know, like having to, like you said, having to do something, having to take something every day. But the tricky part about head stuff is that, especially with anxiety, is that you don't know what's a real concern and what is a manufactured, what is your brain fucking with you.
Oh, it's in my head all the time.
I know it's almost always proven. Oh, Matt just
spilled
over water.
We spill water.
That's why you put a cap on the water.
I was reaching to drink more of it. And
Matt, did I cause
my motor
that
skills.
In
my
any
motor
way.
Skills.
No, see, has it been Brody, a while since a cigarette, Matt?
Guys, it's been like 20 minutes.
That's a nicotine twitch. Nicotine twitch.
Nick-a-twitch. You don't know. It can be very tricky to know, like, what. Because every time, you know, you can go, well, I've had 100 anxiety attacks in the last year, and every single one has just turned out to be anxiety, and so it's not real. But this one, maybe this one, there's something really. So it is kind of. It's a fucked up way to have to.
It's tricky, and then when you throw in the fact that you're, you know, we're performers or comedians, and you're not that we're better. Doesn't make that. That's not what I'm saying.
We're better.
But yeah. How you react with you're interacting. So if you're not in control of your head and your thoughts. How you react with people, for me, if I'm not feeling right and sensitive and, you know, already tension because maybe I'm withdrawing, you know, that could lead, you know, I really have to check myself. You know, I don't want to.
Before you wreck yourself.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to be unprofessional, which I'm not, but I also, you know what, Chris, honestly, it is 90% in my head. It really is. You know, so that's kind of what you just got to kind of quiet those voices. And also working helps.
Well, the shitty part is 100% of your head controls 100% of your body.
Well, you're right. It's just kind of weird. You know, your brain, your chest. I mean, you're in your gut. I feel like there's just thinking of those three things. Like my brain, you know, I'm willing to admit my brain, you know, these are normal thoughts. My gut, those are my instincts. I feel like, you know what? That's not normal. My instincts are different, are unique. So I trust my instincts. my head normal, my instincts not different, not normal, mm-hmm. but in a good way. But my heart is in it, caught in the middle. You know what I mean? It's like I got to watch my health and what, you know. I don't go into that red zone, but I know if I could, if I'm in that situation and I'm kind of, you know, I know when I'm vulnerable. So that's one thing I learned. I, you know, I'm not going to go to, you know, cause problems. I don't have road rage, but I do think like, hey, this last, you know, when you have the sweaty palms from not being on Klonopin for 3 days, if somebody, you know, honked at me or said something bad on Twitter, would I overreact and would it get my blood pumping, you know, in a bad way?
Yeah.
And that's what I'm fearful of and I don't like. And I feel for a lot of, maybe because of my show, you know, that I'm in a kind of a vulnerable state right now a little bit. And then also adjusting some meds. Maybe I'm not saying this is the right time or not time. It's a balance act either way. But I am feeling good. So
good.
You know, I'm not depressed. There's no depression. There's no dark thoughts. It's like I just gotta stay in the pocket.
Yeah. Is a part, but you sort of alluding to what you're saying before, is part of you, are you scared of yourself at all? Or do you sort of feel like I can, you know, I recognize the signs if I'm getting a little out of control and I can handle it?
I mean, scared, that's, yeah, I mean, I get scared that, you know, especially now, I mean, I should be meeting with my doctor on a regular basis. She's doing a great job. So I do talk about it. I let my friends know, like, hey, you know, I'm not saying I'm anti-therapy. It's great, but sometimes you do need a change in, you know, change in a voice or an opinion and, you know, but like I said, feeling good. I just want to stay healthy. I mean, that's the number one thing. I have heart disease in my family. Mm. So, you know, and
did they take care of themselves?
My condolences, Chris.
Oh, thank you. You know, thank you.
I should have wrote you a letter.
No,
I had it.
No,
I felt
no,
I have,
you didn't have
I actually have it.
No, that's very sweet. It's, I don't ever, whatever anyone says or does, if they don't say anything, I know that, you know, all of my friends are nice people and I know that they feel, you know, like, hey, that sucks, or they feel bad, and they can either express it or they don't. It's totally, it's
I
totally
should have,
fine.
Though.
No. It's totally, totally fine.
I bought the card.
Well, I mean, if you bought the card, Brody.
I know.
You should probably have brought it.
But, listen, if I have another dad that dies, you can give me that card, okay?
Then so you what you're saying is it. I should marry your mother.
Yes. Listen, Matt works out a lot. He still smokes like a chimney. You might not have to hold on to it for long.
Let me ask one.
Oh, like, I don't feel so bad if you drop dead in the next.
He's not.
Like,
he's not. He's good. He's
months.
Good. He's good.
Please don't die.
Well, I'll be on the five heading down to Irvine tonight.
Please don't die, just so I don't feel like an asshole.
Wear your seatbelt.
The most it's selfish. Real.
I drive
way to
a Volvo, guys.
Oh,
I'll be fine.
I drove a Volvo at one point. Very
great
safe.
Car.
A safe car, and you
great
feel good.
Car.
At
a little crash cage.
Chris, not to bring this up, but
sure.
I mentioned heart disease, and you know,
it's fine.
And it's my father died of had a heart attack. My father had two heart attacks. Two double bypasses.
Oof.
My uncles, my mother had a quadruple bypass. So I feel like genetically it's in me, and maybe emotionally it's in me.
Mm-hmm.
So that plays into it. You know, there's just, it's a, like I said, it's a balancing act. And, you know, like I said, I'm going to exercise first before I do anything rash. I'm going to go, you know what? I mean, I get a physical. I'm not need to go to urgent care. I'm just letting you guys know.
Yeah.
But I do want to exercise. You know, people say, like, I feel like crap. I haven't exercised for a couple weeks.
Yes,
I'm kind of maybe going through that.
That's my favorite hour of the day is the exercising. I love it.
Yeah. I mean, I used to love hiking Runyon Canyon, but I'm going to get back into kettlebells.
Too busy. Let's
too
change
busy.
The canyon. Let's go to a different
it
one.
It is too busy. Yeah.
Aren't they going to shut it down?
I heard they.
I heard someone
they shut
I heard,
down a an entrance
some,
to it.
I thought they were. I had heard that some company like bought a bunch of property and they were gonna like shunk, like shut it down.
I read something like you're anti. I mean, we said Runyon Canyon. You
I don't enjoy
like,
the Runyon.
I felt a reaction.
Don't care for it.
You know what would really be fun? Funyon Canyon.
Funyon.
Where you just hike up a mountain of Funyons.
Every quarter mile, bag of Funyons.
Yeah, Funyons.
Or they put like the amount. They put the amount of Funyons that it takes to burn the calories you're going up, so it negates the entire hike.
Yeah,
but you get to enjoy Funyons. It's a net win.
Yeah, I can't. I had to stop going to Runyon Canyon because of the.
It's such of a scene.
It is
right,
a scene,
but it's not a good one. It's almost like people go there to be seen hiking.
Yeah,
it's just a weird. Yeah, I'm sure I've told this story before. The last time I went to Runyon Canyon was years ago, and I was walking up the hill, and then these two sort of like these type of girls walk by. This type of girl, mm-hmm. Okay,
yeah.
And so
visiting from Van Nuys.
As they were walking by, all I heard. The only part of their conversation I heard was, and then my friend Emily totally levitated. And then they just kept Totally levitated. So my friend Emily totally levitated. But like really seriously.
Brilliant. Better than Chris Angel?
Yeah, no, because Emily did it for real.
Oh, she did it for real.
Chris Angel.
He's just a mind freak.
Yeah.
He's a mind freak. He can get in your head and make you think you saw shit.
He's an interesting cat
to
watch. No. Like his haircut's different now and he's just odd.
Yeah,
I'd like to see a show.
I don't know him. I'm not gonna, you know, as someone who professes to not judge things before experiencing them, all I can say is what I have seen.
Whatever your
is
judgments
not to my taste.
Are of Chris Angel,
I've watched.
Are valid.
He might be an incredibly sweet guy.
What do you think, Brody? What do you think?
I've watched Mind Freak a couple times.
Yeah. You enjoy the show? You enjoy the program?
Well, I haven't watched it for a couple years, but when I saw it, it seemed like. The audience watching it, they were over the top, not real.
Maybe his show could use Klonopin to take some of the freak levels down.
There you go. Bring it down.
Yeah, just bring it down
freak
a little bit.
Freak it down.
Yeah.
You were talking about...
Freak it down. Hey, freak it down, Angel.
Freak it down a notch. I will say this, going back to the Runyon Canyon, as I talk through the laughter.
Please do. Let it be a music bed.
Best stand-up comedian ever. Just plow through the...
Shut up! it's kind of, I won't hike Runyon Canyon now because of that. I don't want to feel like I'm trying to be seen. I'm not,
right.
I do have a billboard right now. It's kind of weird. I'm not freaking out.
It's a great billboard. You got the Comedy Central billboard.
Just don't hike with your headshots.
I don't want, it's like, honestly, I kind of don't want to do, I do keep my head down.
Here's a flash key with my reel. Like, don't,
flash.
That billboard went South Park, Hardwick, Cosby, Stevens.
Nice.
That's the evolution of that billboard.
Nice. I never saw it in person. Never saw it in person.
Oh, it's still up there.
I spent a lot of time up
there. Oh, your billboard.
I didn't.
You had a big at sign,
you didn't
right?
Drive
the
it?
At symbol.
Huh? You know what I love doing? My favorite thing to do?
Sunset in La Cienega is a very crowded.
Here's a fun game
pink
you can play.
Dot.
What?
I play it with Vanessa Ramos, writer of At Midnight. Now she's on Fox.
Cool.
But we drive up Sunset, and before we hit the Laugh Factory and the Comedy Store, we guess who's on the bill.
Oh,
and we get
points
for each.
Oh,
Chris D'Elia right now. Good shot of him being at each one.
That's a great game.
Bobby Lee's usually on the Comedy Store.
Sure, he's a good guest. He's a good go-to guest.
He's great.
I'm up there
points.
Tonight, actually.
There you go.
You're at the store tonight?
I've had a good run at the Comedy Store.
Which room? In the OR?
I'm in the OR Friday nights late.
Nicely done.
Do people go? Do they get crowds?
Yeah, the Comedy Store.
It's Sunset.
Comedy Store does well. Comedy Store.
I haven't been there in years.
They get a good crowd in, meaning people, and no, but I don't mind.
It always, you know, the store to me just feels like a weird Masonic lodge. It's like, if you're in it,
you know what? I've never even been inside.
It's a mixed bag of like the most, you can have some of the weirdest and most amazing and worst, like it's a room of superlatives. Like you can have I think it just runs the gamut from what I remember of like the most amazing show or the weirdest show or the worst show or a show where some guy got up and threw a chair. Like it's
Don Barris. Ooh. Don loves throwing chairs.
I'm gonna add that to my list of people when I drive by. Just
we love throwing chairs are thrown at the Comedy Store. It's just that's the ultimate act of defiance, and that happens. You know, Don will throw chairs. It's funny, but yeah, for some reason, I've felt at home at the Comedy Store. I know it's a hard room, that OR. I don't get the primetime spots, so it's a head thing for me there, meaning that, hey, if I had if Sebastian's out of town, or I'm kidding, I love saying that. I love Sebastian. But, you know, sometimes I'll go on before 11
yeah.
in the OR, and it's a tougher room when you're in that prime time spot at the Comedy Store, and it's a mix. I mean, maybe I'm thinking just from my last experience the other night. It was on Christmas, so it was mm-hmm. a special, you know, the crowd was a certain way. But I usually go on when they're fractured, like the last, you know, it's like right over the hump, and then I kind of like shake them up a little bit. Yeah. They've seen a lot of comedy at that point. So it's, yeah, if I was to go up at 10:30 or 10 o'clock, I think it's a tough room, and it probably makes you a better stand-up comedian for, sure. you know, the road, because you're getting the tourists, you're getting locals, you're getting people who are, I'm going to say tour, you get tourists yeah. there. So
it's a local road club.
It's the exact opposite experience from performing, say, here at the Nerdist Showroom, where
exactly.
you're essentially, I mean, a room like this is fun, but it doesn't necessarily prepare you for performing in real clubs, because, you know, the shows are sort of theme shows, and that all of our kind of nerdy ilk shows up, and so it's a very safe room, and they get all the references, and they're friendly. Where at the Comedy Store, if you're going up at that point, it's just a mixed bag of, like, well, whoever showed up, and you got to figure out what the common
yeah.
points mm-hmm. of, like, the sort of common threads are in that group, and it's really...
Well, you know what,
like,
I find is a very common
it's hard.
Thread? Men and women are different, guys.
They are.
There you
just
go.
Just as different as L.A. and New York and air travel and black people and white people.
Oh, I steer clear
all
of that
different.
One. I steer clear
all
of
different.
All different.
Yeah.
It is, yeah, it's a true mixed bag, but I'll say this, yeah, I mean, you described it perfect, and it's like you like to think that the clubs these days, you are building a fan base. You don't want to perform, you know, it prepares you for the road, but ultimately, do you want to be in a room where you have to fight all the time or to prove that you're a certain way?
At a certain point, no.
No, at a certain point, no. I don't want to do that anymore. I just want to, like, breathe and relax. Be positive, have fun. I don't want to get mad. I don't, for various reasons. But I would like to go to London. I want to go do a pub.
Oh,
and
sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Bring that, maybe bring some combative fun, but keep it fun. Yeah. You know,
They'll bring it for you.
You've been over there? Have you
oh,
done
yeah.
stand up?
Yeah, 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 yeah. But the most recent time, people came out to see me on purpose, so it was a different experience. But yeah, it's fun. It's the pub shows are kind of a steeplechase. But yeah. if you can,
I want to do
if
it.
If you can not get thrown off, I think you would do great. Actually, I think
I've done Dublin.
Yeah,
I did a festival there. I just always have had, just like when I was a kid, I always wanted to go to New York. It was something in me, and I went, and I still just have this. You know, I'm drawn to London
yeah.
for some reason.
I love it.
You know,
so London.
I'd like to go there when I can and do some, you know, I like Oasis. I like those guys. I like their attitude. So I feel like maybe I
you should
connect.
Open for them.
Oh, if they're still around, or one of the brothers, or
Ed Gallagher.
They're always fighting.
You're going up for Ed Gallagher, hopefully not Gallagher.
You can there do you it.
I like it.
Wait a minute, where's Wonderwall? This guy's smashing a melon. He looks dressed like a mime. What the fuck? I don't understand.
So did Rory sell his act to Liam? Is that what happened?
That's what happened.
You know Gallagher 1, Gallagher 2.
Yeah,
it's so crazy. Some people don't, I'm sure.
Well,
Gallagher
guys.
1, Gallagher 2,
I'm not
going to
smash this fucking melon if you're going to be a cunt, Liam.
I always love it, like, the when Oasis, they would talk, like, they'd use subtitles for them. You know, you can't even understand them.
You can tell the intelligence level of a network by who they are subtitling when they're speaking.
Yeah.
Like, because a lot of times you'll see, you know, a guy with a not particularly thick English accent, and he gets subtitled.
Right.
That's when you're aware that you're watching TLC. Now, if you change the channel, go over to the History Channel, you'll see that that gentleman won't be subtitled, but the Swamp People, mm-hmm. they will be subtitled.
Oh.
Flip back to Animal Planet, Swamp People not subtitled.
What are you watching on Animal Planet? My dog ate what?
I like Tanked, which is a show about building fish tanks.
Okay.
Also, oh, I've seen those guys.
Yeah, yeah. I also enjoy Finding Bigfoot, as always. I'm always going to enjoy that show.
Is that Judah Friedlander's show?
Yep.
Should be, right?
You don't see the one where...
It looks just like Bubba.
You don't watch the one where the dog ate something and then they reenact it and they take it to the vet and then everything's okay?
No, what's that called? Animal
I think it's called
Animal?
My Dog Ate...
My Dog Ate Something. My Dog Has a Blog. Yeah. Dog with a Blog is a show.
What?
There's a show called Dog with a Blog.
Where?
Nickelodeon.
All right.
But it's not Animal Planet, but there is... You know, it's a Dog with a Blog.
I love it.
That probably got pitched to Animal Planet first, and they were like, that's even weird for us.
Animal Planet, it's a so Tumblr strange. Tie-in, so...
Tumblr tie-in, everybody, Animal
TT. I felt like I want to get involved in the TV talk. Only time I really watch TV is when I go down to my mom's place. I watch a lot of Mentalist. I watch NCIS Los Angeles.
Oh, that's a good one.
I've never watched The Mentalist. Is he an empath? He reads, he feels.
No, he's just a, and this is all what I've gathered from commercials. He's just one of these guys that can study a situation and figure out the numbers and know what someone's thinking and all that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. I just like,
and he's also incredibly handsome.
Well, yeah,
I mean, maybe I'm drawn into that in a weird. No, but it's I just like the show. I like the vibe of the show, and I also been watching that was whatever my mom DVRs the show on ABC, the political with Kerry Washington, that one
Scandal. Of course,
I like that. I feel good that I'm watching. Yes, yeah. I'm involved in America.
Scandal's a good show.
So I watched that, and then I love the there's a TNT Boston Cop show. It's Donnie Wahlberg. No, it's like a real Donnie Wahlberg.
Oh, right. He's
the Boston cop show. It's so I get my TV stuff in, and
Is it Blue Kids on the Block?
Blue.
I like that.
I like that. Usable.
Okay,
we'll take it.
Great, thanks.
All right. I just cleared the hump. Donnie Wahlberg does everything.
He does. He's opened up Wahlburgers with his Wahlberg family,
including Jenny McCarthy. I think they're dating.
They're together.
Yeah, they're together now,
good
too.
For him.
Wahlberg's really he's made a name for himself. No pun intended.
I like the Wahlbergs.
He's
I'm
done.
With the Wahlbergs.
I feel like Donnie has done the best of the new kids, right?
Well, I don't know. I don't know what the other ones are doing.
Exactly.
So it's
exactly.
But that doesn't mean that they're not doing things.
It does.
One Jordan, of them could be an investment banker, and you wouldn't know just because it's
good
not,
point, Chris.
You don't. You just don't know. I don't know what they're doing. I'm just not sure.
I mean, but if he was an investment banker, I feel like he's still not doing as well as Donnie.
Well, I just don't know. I mean, these are things that we would have to research, and then we could pass our judgments on them, and, you know, I'm trying to reserve judgment.
Kids, write in to the Nerdist podcast and tell us what the new kids are
Send
up to.
Send a self-addressed stamped envelope to Picture Pages.
Who is a new, the fresh new kids? It's One Direction, right? That's
yeah,
the one.
Yeah.
They've got the torch right now.
They're
big.
They're the bee's knees.
They do stadiums.
Yep. Wembley.
I think they're good for America. I'd rather have them
Wembley
than I really don't like. I don't want to sound hacky or like
sure.
anybody else. I'm not
so
into
you're
the,
in a safe zone. You're at the
I'm not
podcast.
Into the Miley Cyrus stuff.
Sure.
What she does. I'm not into Bieber's attitude. Mm-hmm. I never was.
Well, take a stand.
But I you know, it's tough being young. It's tough having a lot of money and people following you everywhere. So
that's gotta really fuck a kid up.
I,
right?
I feel really bad for that kid. For the sake, it's almost not fair. And one section of our culture might go, well, fuck that guy. He's got a shit ton of money. But it doesn't matter because it's not gonna fix the fact that he has no real barometer for how people are supposed to interact or communicate. And, you know, when the news, when he just said, oh, he's going to retire, it's going to fuck him up even worse because, you know, it's not going to take long before people just don't give a shit anymore. And then it's going to be like, hey, I wonder why people don't respond when I say things now. Like, it's already starting. His movie opened and it kind of tanked.
It did tank.
So it's just that's going to fuck. It just opened up a couple days ago.
Oh, really?
And so yeah.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah,
it made like $1.2 million.
It's already on Redbox.
I wasn't even aware of that.
In 1,000 theaters,
maybe. It's already on Redbox. I had to say that twice just to get it in.
But it actually it's
at select 7-Elevens.
That poor kid, a kid like that, just needs a good family structure to.
I feel like I don't know if somebody reached out to him. He does need some form of intervention, maybe Eminem or somebody. I don't want to say Leif Garrett. It hasn't been good for him, but some...
Leif just takes everybody to the crash spot. Just like the end of my music.
Wow.
What if it were Leif Erikson and just a Viking just came and took him and taught him how to be
a
Viking?
That's not a bad life.
Right?
Life of a Viking.
That wouldn't be a terrible...
So much pillaging.
So much pillaging. He sort of culturally pillages.
I suppose, yeah.
Are we talking about...
We're talking about Leif Erikson.
Leif Erikson is...
The Viking from olden times.
Capital One commercials? I don't know. I got lost.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah. He's of
Leif
the ilk.
Erickson,
he's
okay.
of the ilk of the Alec Baldwin Capital One commercials.
Gotcha.
Not the one where he's a secret agent, but the one where he...
Vikings are good people.
Vikings, yeah, I feel like they... Well, I don't know.
Well, why are they... Well, why is it the Minnesota Vikings? Because of Norwegian...
Yes, a lot of Norwegian descent.
So I like that vibe.
Okay.
I'm into it.
So I think the first time I met you was probably at the Gypsy Cafe in like 99, maybe 2000?
Right. That's about it. I would say I moved out here officially back home in, I want to say, March of 2000. So I may have been back in 99, but yeah, right around that time.
And as I've told many people before, you have the most non-lethal fucked up prank that you play which is that you'd be standing out in front of the Gypsy Cafe waiting to go up, and you'd just be talking to Brody, and then two girls would walk by, like
two young girls,
because it was in Westwood.
Sure,
right?
Yeah, Westwood. Right?
So
yeah.
a couple young girls would walk by, and then whatever you were talking about, Brody would just cut you off and go, "Hey, so why'd you hit that girl?" Like, just so they could hear you. and then it is like the
it's the verbal scarlet letter.
It's like the crane technique from Karate Kid. Yeah. No can defend. Like, there's nothing you can say that where you don't look like an asshole. I didn't you know. And by that point, they've already cast a judgmental eye on you, and you've been labeled as a guy who hit a girl. Just because...
Before it was funny. It's not, you know, I don't think it was ever
again,
funny.
Non-lethal? No one actually gets hurt?
Funny.
No.
It's pretty funny.
But it just... It's
like beanbags.
It's a way... Yeah, it's just a way to make someone look
like
a
rubber bullet.
Asshole. Yeah.
I haven't done that one for a long time. I don't know...
Bring it back.
I don't know where that came from, but it's just, you know, elevator talk.
That's a great phenomenon, elevator talk.
I can't even stand normal elevator talk. If I was with someone and they I would fucking, I would go into a full-blown.
No, but like when you say shit to your friend as people are getting in the elevator as though you're continuing a conversation, which makes them look bad.
Yeah.
That's a thing I do a lot.
That's fun.
And that's a great name for it, elevator talk.
I don't talk in the elevator. I won't talk to people. I just look down.
I try to talk to people, and I just get a vibe.
Well, sometimes if you're hanging out with Doug Benson,
sure.
or, you know, he's known for, you could smell a certain way you're coming from a party or mm-hmm. whatever, you know, a hotel elevator. I don't want to make, just in elevators in general, keeping my head down.
Yeah.
I just don't want to be that guy, too friendly and...
And
that's
then,
true.
And then and I think the first time we really hung out was at Zach Galifianakis' little apartment in Santa Monica.
Okay, yeah.
When he lived off...
we can say.
Yeah, he lived off Montana, right?
Montana.
Yeah, like 10th or something.
Right around there.
And he had this tiny little cool apartment. And then we were over one night, and he was laughing so hard because you brought out these VHS tapes of the public access show did in Seattle.
Oh.
And so I really couldn't tell if Zach was making fun of you or if he genuinely loved it, because he would say, like, "This is the worst thing I've ever seen."
Right,
Brody.
I remember that. I think he loved making fun of me. So I've looked at those tapes, and a lot of it is cringeworthy. It depends on what frame of mind you're in or where you're watching it. If you're watching it in Santa Monica, it could upset you.
Are they online anywhere? Are those videos online anywhere?
No. I mean, there may be a few minutes here and there online that I've put up, and I have a bunch of the tapes that, you know, there is usable stuff from it today, but a lot of it's hard for me to watch. And I, you know, but back then I remember that night actually, but it kind of, I think Zach just likes making fun of me. So, you know, so I get that.
I also know that, you know, there was that thing where I was like, is Zach just hanging around him to make fun of him? But then at a certain point I realized that Zach really loves you. Like, he really, really, really cares about you a lot.
Yeah, I'm surprised. No, I'm kidding. I don't want to think about it too much. I mean, he's actually put his name on the line, you know, his career, not his career, but, you know, he's got a respected career, and to have him say, hey, I'll put my name on this, on Brody's show. And he actually put the thought in my head a long time ago about, you know, about that time, maybe, you know, when I first, those early years, about, he always thought it was funny how I, my relationship with my sister, or things that I was into, like Blink 182, or, you know, this silly cable access show that I had some, you know. Zach was just, he always put, he put that in my head, that that was funny to him, and just kind of strange, funny and strange. I never took it like, this guy's being a jerk to me. There was no, none of that. So, but he put it in my head, you know, a long time ago. So, just kind of took that into the show.
I don't know. And now there's a billboard.
Well, now there's a billboard, but Zach is a, yeah, is a really good friend. And I didn't, you know, I question myself about that sometimes. I go, am I friends with this guy because he's funny, or was I friends? I mean, when I saw Zach perform, when I saw him for the first time, it was back in New York, probably, yeah, 98 or 99. It was Stand Up New York. And the first time I saw him, I go, this guy's funny. I just knew, like, you could just tell Zach's funny.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just had that, it's funny. So then I saw him at a taping of Apartment 2F with the Sklar.
Yeah, the Sklars. Oh, 2F, the MTV show.
Yeah, exactly. And Mike Royce was the audience warm-up. It was shot over at Chelsea Piers, and I had just done Luna Lounge, which was, you know, the popular Lower East Side, and a couple of the girls worked on the MTV show. Hey, you should come down and check out the show. So they basically, you know, put me on a list to go watch the show, and Zach was on it. He was just funny. And I didn't really know. I didn't know Zach other than seeing him at Stand Up New York and then seeing him on the show. It was just funny. And so then I saw him another time at Stand Up New York, and then it was like Jeff Ross, Zach, and a bunch of other people, and we went to some bar. And that was really the only time I hung out, I ever saw Zach or hung out with him in New York. But I talk about, like, we hung out all the time. And then it was just, you know, doing shows out here initially. I knew, I wasn't, like, tracking him down, like, I need to work with this guy. You know, you're just drawn into funny people or good people or whatever. And I was do shows around, but it was mostly, I think, Adam Grotman's room, Cafe 101.
Oh, shit, that's right. The last laugh before the 101. I remember that. It's before they remodeled it.
Yeah.
It was before it got super hipstery. Like, it really was just an old Best Western.
Yeah.
With old people who would
go
in there.
Exactly.
And then...
Wow.
So you've been into the 101, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so right around when you enter from Franklin, no one who doesn't live is like, I totally understand this.
Don't worry
is too
about
local
it.
Reference. But so you walk in and there's the lunch counter.
Google map it. Go Street View.
Street View.
Take a look at the right. That's the Cafe 101. Take a look at the left. You got the
Scientology building.
That's the hotel.
The hotel.
That was the...
It's not Scientology.
It's the Hollywood Towers.
You can see Maroon 5 playing acoustic set there.
That's also the model for the Tower of Terror if you're a Disney
fan.
Oh,
nice.
Yeah.
So, it used to just be right in the corner right there.
In the corner inside the restaurant?
Yeah.
Or, okay.
The hotel and restaurant. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just inside. I mean,
it was in the restaurant,
actually. There was a glut of shows in that day where...
Restaurant shows.
Yeah, it would just be a surprise comedy show for anyone in the restaurant.
The worst surprise for someone eating dinner.
Well, it is if you're an elderly couple and people are on stage talking about, like, queefs or whatever. Like, it's just a weird sort of, and at that point, you know, at that point in the comedy, it might still be this way, but, you know, I feel like people were even more dirty. Like, people were even dirtier and more vile on stage.
You think so, really?
I think so.
You think then?
I do.
I don't know.
Interesting.
Possibly. I think, you know, comedians are smarter. I think crowds are smarter. They're more.
Maybe it was just me.
No, it's not you.
You were filthier. You could have been filthier.
Yeah, you might have been. Yeah.
I mean, you do have the mouth of a sailor.
You do curse sometimes, Chris.
A lot of
the time. You do curse sometimes.
I curse a lot.
But I always go back. But I go back to that. That 101 show was actually a pretty, pretty good show. Adam did a good job of putting some, you know, Sklar Brothers did it. Zach did it. I would always, you know, Maria Bamford.
Kindler, like everyone.
I think Kindler did it.
Janine.
I think even Patton did. I think all those guys would do a good job. So saw Zach there. But that was just, we just started doing more shows and, you know, naturally things happened. So it was like, it's a fun guy to hang out with. And so I'm lucky. I guess I'm lucky, but hey, you create it. You put the energy out and hope. I don't want to get all, like, you know, get all warm and fuzzy, but just, you know, good energy, you attract that kind of crowd. You know, hey, somehow I'm working at the At Midnight show.
Yeah.
Oh, you do a great job too.
I threw that.
I hope you come back. Will you please? I hope you come back.
I am coming back.
He's got to know we're back in a week.
Chris, good. I am coming
good,
back.
Good,
it's,
good.
I mean, yeah, whatever I said, I'm not sure. Or no, they don't even tell you. They keep you out of the loop.
I love
on
having
that.
You warm up
on
the
phone right now.
I love having you warm up on the show because you used to do. You always used to do the. If you could warm up the Chelsea audience, I feel like you could warm up.
Exactly. That's.
The three years that I did that show, you were doing one. Well, you for
oh,
most
yeah,
of it, and
exactly.
then you.
Exactly. So you know,
left.
You know.
Yeah.
Brody
okay,
took
good.
Over for me on that midnight, and I can tell there's a difference.
You know, warm up is a very specific.
Well, listen,
it's a very specific thing to.
Turns out I had other shit to do.
You have a lot of other
yeah,
stuff.
You
to
got
do.
A lot of response. You do a great. You're very responsible over there.
Thank
I
you,
see flashcards. I see a lot of stuff.
So it's a very specific kind of performance to warm up a crowd and then immediately just drop whatever you're doing and recede into the shadows and immediately come back out and try to keep them re-engaged.
Yep.
And when the crowd is not warmed up on a television show, it makes such a fucking difference that I don't think people realize if people at home are watching a television show and they go, oh, the show isn't really that funny, a lot of times what they're sensing is that the audience that was at the show is not reacting. And it could be that that show is not funny, or it could be that the audience just wasn't warmed up and they just weren't connecting as much. It's such an important detail.
You have to give, like, if I'm working on a show, I need just 15 to 20 minutes to warm them up. Ideally, maybe a little more than 20. That's what I take a cold audience.
Yeah.
To get them TV ready to laugh rhythmically, find it, boom, boom, boom. Give me, you know, it's not ideal. Sometimes you don't get it. I mean, but 15, I can do 12, 15 is like where I'm shooting because I've had those times where I said, guys, the audience isn't warm yet. They're not good. I'm telling you. I've had a couple times that's happened.
Yeah.
So never at Chris's show. And, you know, it happens occasionally. But my instincts tell me that, yeah, you need about 15. They're coming in. They're looking around. You got to, like, let's go. Somebody wants, it's like, they're not warm. Well, things happen. So you got to deal with it.
And I forced Brody to do one of my favorite jokes of his. He didn't
want to
do
it. Which one was
it?
Because it's too polarizing, and it's a little too dark for a TV show audience.
It makes sense now why Chris wanted you to do it.
It's such a
if he gives me the okay, I'll do it. But I kind of messed it up.
It's such a good joke. It's such a good joke.
I've been doing that one for a long time. I don't save it for my special.
Save it, yeah. Save it.
Save it for.
So like a lot of my jokes, I don't think some of my jokes I just keep doing.
Yeah,
but. I do have a special that I'm working towards, and I make a reference to retiring my jokes, and so even if I bring up, hey, I thought you retired it. Well, came back. I don't know. There's some. I kind of gave myself a safeguard, but
Michael Jordan of jokes.
It got bored. Keep coming back, but it is about jokes. I'm sure, Chris, you get people emailing you. What good advice? I always say to a new comedian. Stage time and jokes. You know, you can go into taping your sets and watching, but those are that's the foundation. Stage time and jokes.
Well, how much do you think should be, like, where do you land in terms of, like, watching someone take something that really honest that happened to them and try to make it funny versus someone who's just being ridiculous and funny? I mean, I guess it depends on, different performers have different strengths, but what do you think about?
What do I like to look at, or what am?
Well, what do you like to look at, and what do you like?
The latter.
What? Yeah.
Crazy, funny in the moment.
Yeah.
You know, I appreciate guys working on bits, like honing bits and working at it and seeing that. I get that too, but it's also funny. Just I as a performer or whatever, just my instincts tell me when I'm. It's like fun to watch funny people. You know, so I do respect great jokes.
Let's just be clear, not the movie Funny People. Funny people.
Funny
people.
Literally funny people. Yeah.
But, yeah, I would, Andy Kindler's just a funny guy, but he's got jokes too. So it's just, I laugh at that. I laugh at my friends. I like watching my friends. I get a kick out of that. So, but, Yeah, I think if you have jokes, which is going to give you confidence up there. Okay, you confidence that you have jokes. You have those, you know, bullets, mm-hmm. so to speak, or whatever. You have that protection. And then the more you get on stage in combination with the jokes, I think you're going to become comfortable and your true voice will eventually emerge, which takes probably, back in the day at least, 5 to 7 years maybe. But now with the advent, I think, of podcasting and the popularity of comedy and the different, you know, you don't have to be this kind of comedian. You don't have to be a club comedian to be a successful stand-up comedian. You can do rock clubs and develop that. You can do shows like Meltdown or, you know, all the alternative quote unquote rooms. So
now I know why you like The Mentalist, because part of your act is almost like you are a mentalist.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
oh.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, where you ask someone where they're from and they say I'm from here, and then you list 20 things about where they're from, their school, their mascot. You start referencing streets. There's almost like a little bit of a like an Amazing Randy kind of a thing about it.
But it's a trick. Go ahead, Matt. Go ahead, Matt.
No, I was just gonna say that I do your encyclopedic knowledge of the valley is fascinating. To me.
Well,
it's genuinely fascinating to me.
Well, I feel that I've always had a good memory.
Yeah.
I felt like I always knew stats. I knew about stadiums. I knew about, you know, I feel like I do have somewhat.
How tall
of a,
is the Green Monster?
It's 37 feet, is it? I mean, that's, I'm not great.
He's
I'm
good. He's good.
But there's
he's real good.
But there's guys who are better. I'm not claiming.
Yeah,
I'm not an expert at it.
Yep, yep.
But I will say, at least last, you know, since 2000, for me to be doing audience warm up, I did 1,000 shows at Fox Sports, mm-hmm. best damn sports show. I did 400 shows at Chelsea. It's like I have home field advantage.
Yeah.
It's like I grew up here. So I know everything about here. And then I got every high school. A lot of different high schools would come into to Best Damn Sports Show. So I'd learn all about those high schools. But I had North Hollywood High School baseball team come in at least a dozen times. I had Marshall tennis. I mean, I just
learned.
So it's
basically Groundhog Day.
Yeah, over. And yeah, it was. Oh, yeah. But you learned about it and then just. But I knew once I started talking about the Valley and saying 818. Stuff and people caught on to it. It was just like, okay, I'm gonna throw it out there, because I never used to be, you know, when I lived in New York for 3 years or starting out in Seattle, I never said I'm LA, we're better. I did on the radio a call in, but stand up I didn't do it necessarily,
right.
But then I just started doing it out here in a nice way, and it got people liked it. So, you know, 818 till I die, is it gonna fly? 818 till I die, is it gonna fly in New York? Probably not. But I did live in New York, so I can go 718, you got it. Brooklyn, been there. I didn't jump off the bridge. Brody, Steve Brody.
One digit off, really?
One digit off. I'm one digit off.
That's the name of your comedy special.
One digit off.
So I don't remember what happened with Chelsea's show, but you left.
I left on bad terms.
You left on bad terms.
It could be all good. I mean, it is all good. You know, I haven't been on for the last couple of months. I'm usually on once a month.
Hmm.
But, yeah, I left. I talk about it on my show. It was a big thing for me because, yeah, I worked, you know, about 400 shows at Chelsea. And I came in there early on when it was just kind of finding its footing and, you know, folding chairs out there. And it's,
yeah, I remember
kinda,
those days.
You know,
it was a really small, low-budge show.
Yeah, and so this is kind of getting my footing there also. And then just, I remember I remember Chelsea said something like, hey, the audience, why aren't you guys into it? And I said something like, all right, I'm going to push them a little bit now. Because whenever Chelsea would, I just felt the audience is my responsibility. If the host is commenting on an audience not being good, even in a funny way or mm-hmm. whatever, it's still like, all right, didn't do my job. That would rarely happen. But I would that and kind of like, okay, I'm going to do that. And there's just a little, I remember, but the big thing was Snoop Dogg came on.
Okay.
And I said, I'm going to take a chance here. I'm going to make some Snoop Dogg specific music. I was using their little dance music CD. I go, you know what? I'm going to do my own. So Snoop Dogg came on because I knew he liked me from Best Damn Sports Show.
Mm-hmm.
He'd been on there a few times. So I knew, okay, he's going to get me. So I did a, you know, I made a Snoop Dogg CD and he came out and I was like doing, the crowd was just into it and he liked it. And I just kept that from that point on. I said, let's just keep cranking it like that. So I started, like, made my own little CD. Said, I'm not going to use their little dance pop music. I'm going to start making my own CD. You know, kept within the parameters of that. And just started building on that. So anyway, that was it was a nice machine over there. I was happy, feeling good. You know, without, you know, of course I had my little ups and downs just like anywhere. But that one day, yeah, I kind of like butted heads with one of the producers there. It was a holiday. I don't rehash it, but yeah, it kind of was not fun how it ended. And I kind of left. It was nothing to do with Chelsea. It was more me butting heads with a couple producers and chest thumping or that sort of thing. Pissing match, I like to say.
Mm.
So that's kind of how it ended. And it bothered me because I was instantly shut out. And I felt like, hey, I gave, you know, it's professional, it's life, that's life, this is business, I guess, you know. But I really gave my, you know, I worked at that show, cell phone off, focus, everything about the show. It's like totally zeroed in. You know, I'm not that, I'm better now, actually. Like, if somebody's not clapping, I'm not going to, you know, we'll see next Monday. But if I don't get mad at the one guy, it's like.
Two shows Wednesday.
So, yeah, that was it. I just kind of, you know, it left on bad terms, and it bothered me. But, you know, I worked it into the show, and mm-hmm. Chelsea was great to come back on it, and, I mean, come on the show, yeah. And she, I have nothing, you know, Chelsea likes to mess around with me. I never take it like she doesn't like me. I see people will go, oh, she's mean to you. It's like, I'm around, I feel it, I can tell, like, it's not coming from a malicious place.
Right.
I'm the kind of guy, I've said this other times, it's like somebody can be considered not a good person. This guy's you know, this way or that. I don't like this guy. But I'm saying, well, they're good to me. You know, even though they may be me, I try to, right. I wonder why I don't have that vibe. But Chelsea's been good to me. And it just bothered me how I was like put out. And she was kept out of the loop of just like, Chris, look, he didn't even know I was coming in. So that just bothered me for a while, and that, you know, I worked it into the show, but I have nothing but, you know, warm up is really, it's just a great skill to have. I like to do, it's fun to, you know, you, what comedian wouldn't want to have mic time, get on a mic, you get to be hopefully around, you know, if you're on a cool show, you get to be around comedians, friends, luckily in my case, and then just the energy of a show, and then you're making a couple bucks. You get to be on a lot, you're working, and you really feel like you gave to a show. You made it better. You helped it out. That's how I felt when I was at Chelsea, when I was at Best Damn Sports Show on Fox. It was a good feeling. I mean, was I making loads of money? No. Could I have been money? I wasn't. It was like, okay, I'm making enough. I'm learning. I'm soaking it all in. I get to be around Tom Arnold every day. You know, the Pope of Hollywood, I like to say. But just all these different successful athletes, actors, and you pick up on it. I just got, it's just, I've been lucky, you know, to be able to do the warm up. And Chris has mentioned this, and it's kind of gone through my mind since having this show out or my billboard up currently. Like, can I go back and do warm up? Am I going to be able to go in there?
Yeah, you should. Please, please do it. Please be okay with it.
We need you, Brody. Don't.
Please.
You can come back.
See, what we're going to do is do everything in our power to keep your career just right here so that you'll still want to do warm up.
Oh, man.
No.
But, see, that's fun. Laughing. You see, I just laughed right now. It's like, that's what I need. You know? That's the kind of stuff I need.
Now
so.
We should just have you doing push-ups while you're laughing.
Push-ups and laughing. Exercise.
You just reminded me, when you said Tom Arnold, you reminded me of this really horrible story he told on stage of the Laugh Factory once. And the way Tom talks on stage.
Oh, yeah.
It's just like, hey, everything's great. Hey, everything. Hey, it's just one time. And then, and so he had that energy, but the things that come out of his, the things that were coming out of his mouth were so horrifying. And there weren't any jokes, really. He's a super sweet guy, but he's like, yeah, it's like the time, you know, Rosie and I got in a real bad fight one time, and
pulled
out his hair plugs.
I know
he
that
fucking
story.
He fucking just had hair plugs put in, and they got in a huge fight, and she fucking grabbed them in the front of his head and ripped them out.
I know that story. Phantom plug pain.
Can you imagine?
No.
Can you imagine what that type of a relationship would be like?
That was very good for both of them.
Better for Tom, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
Tom seems to be stable.
He's fine.
He's okay.
You know what? I always tell people I'm on the Tom Arnold path. I'm on that route. I'd like to be. Meaning
you fucked Roseanne.
I've made mistakes. You guys gonna ride motorcycles every Sunday in Malibu?
I love it, Matt. I would no. Why? I see that Tom just had a kid a couple years ago, and he's probably 50. I'm sure he's 50. Had a kid
at least.
Great book title. His was.
I'm sure he's 50. I'm sure I'm 50. No, how to? I lost 7
how to lose,
pounds.
How to lose 5 pounds in 10 years?
Yeah, something,
something like that. It's a great book title.
Yeah,
I probably butchered it,
he's
but it's gonna
be at least 50 years old.
Well, Tom, I think he was 43 or 44 when we started Best Damn, so that's been almost. Oh, I'd say he's early 50s is my guess. I'm gonna say 52. Hopefully.
Matt, you got a guess?
Maybe 53.
I'm going to say Tom Arnold is 50.
I'm going to say 53.
I'm going to go one over. I'm going to go 54.
You're saying 54. I say 53. 54.
Matt Myra, you were correct.
Boom. Are you serious?
54. Born Boom. March 6, 1959.
Yeah. Tom's 54.
54
Good
years
for
old.
Him. I
born
love
in
it.
The 50s.
I love it when the older guys are just rocking. Still going.
He's some outside chance sometimes. You drive by the Laugh Factory, you say Tom Arnold. You drive by, there he is.
He could be there. Yeah. I mean, he had that weekly show he was doing. He is a, you know, I loved every day. I would joke with Tom. We would always have a bit and good banter with mm-hmm. the crowd. And, you know, you saw a guy who is professional. Tom knows everybody. You know,
he knows everybody.
Mm-hmm. So it's like, and I got to see him every day. I got to see, you know, he practiced what he preached for the most part, talking about helping out people, and you know he's a recovering addict and all that stuff, so he'd always talk about that. So just being around Tom and going, hey, this guy goes on Howard Stern, he's funny, David mm-hmm. Letterman loves him, so it's like, hey, I would take that, I like that route. And mm-hmm. it was, you know, another guy I was thinking of is, you know, I like Adam Carolla's, I like what he kind of, you know, he's from the Valley also, I kind of like that. So that's when people ask me, what do you see yourself doing in the future? I would say, I like that. You know, Tom, maybe in a personal way, having a child at 50 and mm-hmm. being kind of different and being from Jewish in Iowa and like just kind of energy and liking sports and doing comedy. And so I like, you know, personally, Tom. Had heart problems too, I think. He's got that, you know.
How do you think you would do with the... like an obscene amount of success and money and fame, and would it be weird, or do you think you'd be okay with it?
Well, you know, that I'm handling the Billboard. I mean, that did go through my mind when I was struggling, you know, 2 years ago. I think, could I handle? I'd be freaked out by it.
Well, just because the more famous you get, the more everything you say comes under more scrutiny, the more pressure, the more...
I don't like that. I don't like that you said pressure. That threw me off, Chris.
Okay, I'm sorry.
But scrutiny, I guess scrutiny could lead to pressure.
If that bothers you, it may not. I don't know.
Well, yeah, a little bit. I mean, I don't want to say anything too outlandish. I do watch it. I've always kind of, I mean, I do try to be honest with who I am. I don't want to pull, you know, I'm not Phil Robertson.
You're not?
No.
You're not, wait, you're not Phil Robertson.
I'm not him. Is that his Phil?
This is awkward.
Right?
This is
you thought
because
I was?
The
I
whole
mean,
time we were about Phil. To touch on Duck Dynasty.
I'm Phil Robertson. Enjoy it.
I'm just really proud of myself for having the restraint not to make a Duck Dynasty joke on Twitter.
I haven't done it.
I mean, the real victory is that.
Yeah.
I think if there's any silver lining to
I
this
was like,
whole
this.
Intolerance thing,
they've got this covered.
It's a fact.
Everyone's got this covered.
I like to think that you picked up the phone and went, oh, and then went, I'm going to let this one go. I'm going to let this one go.
Let him ride it out.
I don't do it. I've learned that lesson. I mean, my problem on Twitter, I only get in trouble, you know, when I react to a a negative tweet. I look like a child.
Oh, listen,
mad.
We all do that.
But in terms of like a controversial tweet, I watch it. I don't curse on Twitter. I don't.
I do.
I don't really have my. I don't make my opinions. I kind of. I mean, I'll make little gripes, but
sure.
I kind of just keep it like a reality. It's like you're with me, hanging out with me. So I do watch it, and you're talking about, like, I don't know, Chris, you know, who, but I feel this show, honestly, like that I'm doing, I'm throwing it all out there. It's like all out there, meaning that, look, I talk about me going off meds. I went to a you know, UCLA psych ward. I feel this way about myself. I mean, it's very personal.
What
so
was
I,
the psych ward like?
It was bad at first. At the first, I mean, I couldn't believe I was in there. I knew where I was. It was like, why am I in here? I made a mistake, meaning stopping my meds, cold turkey. I didn't stop them before. We were, you know, an hour ago.
Right.
Ironically, we're broadcasting from Meltdown.
So I can laugh at that. So laughing's great. Laugh about it.
Well, you have to. If you don't, just like my dad dying, if I don't laugh at it, I feel like it totally has control over me. And laughing at stuff makes you feel like you have ownership over an otherwise completely uncontrollable world. Like, it feels good to be able to go, hey, this fucking horrible thing happened. Fuck you. I'm going to laugh at it anyway. It feels good. It feels really good.
Well, I do. My dad passed away suddenly. And I do jokes about my dad. Not necessarily. I don't get, you know, graphic or specific, but I feel like when I make a joke about my dad or I'm talking about my dad, keep coughing. I'm like paying homage to him. He likes it. That's how I feel.
Yeah, my dad did too. My dad would too. He always said, talk about me as much as you want. Yeah. I don't care. Talk about the time I fucked a blow up doll. I don't care. You know,
exactly.
He just loved it. He loved the attention.
So when I talk about my dad like that, it's like, you know, I'm not saying it makes me feel better. I feel good. It just feels natural. So, yeah, I can joke about it. I can joke about my father. Maybe not specifically certain things.
But when the Twitter now I feel dumb saying the word, but when the Twitter meltdown
the Twitter meltdown
happened, that's when you went into the psych ward.
Yeah, that's kind of like
that was stopping the meds.
Yeah, that was. God, I'm cramping on my leg.
Mine did too.
My body is just breaking down on this podcast. That was, yeah, I stopped my meds cold turkey. And I was also on an antibiotic. Let's not forget. I was traveling around. I went to Dublin. I went to Montreal. And then there I got sick. And that's where I started. I mean, even before then, I was thinking, I'm going to get off these meds. And I wasn't doing it. You know, I didn't know what I know now.
Well, what did it feel? What did it feel
felt
like?
Felt good.
Get off your meds. Like, having the meltdown, what is that? What do you think? What does it feel like? What is your reality feel like?
I was wide awake, alert, happy, celebrating because I was told, enjoy this, take a victory lap. I was like, it was put in my head. You know, I had this just. It was just like, yeah, my head freaking, I could handle it. It was like funny. It was like I was performing. So I just melded reality and the future just all into one. And it was, I was combative. That's the only problem. I was like happy. But the minute you weren't happy with me or you say, what are you doing? You're acting weird. Like, F you. I'm right. I'm having a good, it's like. Whoa, that's not normal. And that's kind of where I was. Like, if you're with me laughing around, you're good. You had immunity if you laughed. But the minute you say, hey, Brody, you're not acting right. And I go, fuck. I don't want to cry. You know, fuck you, man. Mm.
Which is what your close friends would, I would imagine, be saying to you. People like Zach probably like, hey, what's going on?
Well, yeah. And that kind of like, you know, Zach. And look, you can't prepare anybody for that. It's like... They could have walked away or, I mean, look, they did I'm glad they did what I did. It could have ended bad. I could have just kept spiraling and something bad could have happened to me. Mm-hmm. I mean, I wasn't violent to, like, I'm going to pick up a, you know, shoot up a place. Never, ever entered my mind. But I did mention, like, see, there people go, oh, you said you had a gun on Twitter. I mean, when you can't say that. But I was saying that and kind of, you know, I was, you know, I'll get a, it's just like when you tweet sometimes. You'll tweet something, like something caught your eye, and you tweet, and like, you know what you're talking about, but the audience doesn't know when you make that tweet or something. So I was getting phone calls, like people, my friends were concerned. Brody, what's wrong with you? They were like concerned. It was like getting me going and amping me up, or I'm fine, I'm fine. They kept calling. And so I went on Twitter. I go, leave me alone. I got a gun in my mouth. I think that's what I was so out of it, but also just so reactionary. Never had it. I mean, I just said it. I had no censor. So, you know, that when you say that, you know, it's a red alert.
Mm-hmm.
So, but letting you know, and future employers out there, I never, ever, you know, I'm not a violent guy. Never. So you just can't say that. So, but, you know, so I went to the, I just knew, I felt, I'm breathing right now. I gotta take a breath. Whew.
It's your cardio.
I felt, yeah, this is my cardio. I mean, but I felt like I needed a break. Like, I knew what was happening. I go, I'm like on a bender here. I mean, I even asked my mom. I go, Mom, can I come down to the desert? I need a break. And she said no. So I think they were already talking to my mom, like, Steven, my real name, doesn't sound right. So everyone was like, and everybody was like communicating.
Gotcha.
So I couldn't go down there, and I was just acting up. It was just like, but I was, you know, when you look up all the signs of mania, I hit them all, you know, big talk and aggressive and sweating and driving fast. You know, delusions. I wasn't hearing voices, none of that stuff. But I was like talking big stuff, and it paid off. No, I mean, I couldn't think of a funnier word. I was talking big stuff, and it happened. No, so it was just, look, I'm glad they acted the way they did. It taught me a lesson. You know, some people say, hey, you didn't have to go to the hospital. Yeah, I went to the hospital, and when I was first there, it was like, I couldn't believe I was there. Even though I just couldn't believe it. I was trying to tell people, why am I here? You know, I went off my med. We all know that, right? And that just, by them not responding to me or treating me like a number, the nurses there, it just got me going more. Because I was in that, I was still manic. You know, I was still like revved up. So you're treating me like...
That would drive me crazy even without being revved up. But I was like, could you please just...
Well, that's what I was, okay, well, yeah, that's what I was going through. And, you know, I was just freaking revved up still. And then they start giving you these drugs. That's when they start giving you Seroquel and Depakote. These are like, you know, antipsychotics and like lithium type stuff, just chemical straitjacket.
Ugh.
And, but it felt, I needed it, and it was like a welcome relief, like... Because after, I mean, I got kicked out. I was defiant. I got sent to, I was at the regular place for like 2 days, arguing still, sneaking in my friends, you know, to tweet, all that. I was like doing crazy stuff, yelling at nurses who were like, if you're still disrespecting me, I was in the hangover. I did TMZ. I made a mistake, you know? Why you treat me like these other weirdos or something like that? But so then I went to like ICU. They said, you got to go. So they took me around like into a padded room, basically. They go, if you don't settle down, we're going to give you a shot. It's like a Filipino guy and a big Persian guy. And I go, you're being mean. You're anti-Semitic. I said, I pulled the anti-Semitic card.
Jesus.
And I was like, I go, we're going to give, I didn't want to get a shot. So I said, okay, all right. I mean, I was always, for the most part, you know, lucid, is that the... I knew...
Well, if you knew, yeah. If you,
I kind of knew, but I didn't, you know? I was like, So I just kept bouncing around. And then they, you know, the meds started kicking in, and then I started to relax, and they put me in a more mellower place. And then once I was there, I was kind of resigned to like, hey, this is, it's like rehab, it's like a rest, it's like vacation almost, it was for me. And I wasn't, I thought maybe I'd only stay for like 5 or 6 days. Okay. You know, no internet, no, not, it's like rehab. It was like, ah, nice bed, nice shower. I'm on these pills that are kind of like just chilling me out. And I don't have to worry about shaving or email, none of that stuff. Just they got my food for me, that sort of thing. So I figure I'll go home in 5 days. Then I like, it's like 7 or 8 days, so maybe 7 days in. I met because it was like a holiday or weekend. Then I, so you have a like a meeting with your doctor and the board person. And he basically, we talked and he asked, you know, how things are going or whatever. And he basically says, look, I can't trust you. You know, it's like, how do I know you're not going to go into Starbucks and cause problems again? That's, so it was like, I'm not, I'm fine. You know, I wasn't like that bad, but it was like, okay. And then he said, well, you know, you're going to, you walk out, and they basically told me that I'm going to be there for another like week, you know, like piss me off. That's when I got mad at that point, but not like yelling.
Sure.
But it was like, I went on a hunger strike, a 1 day hunger or 1 meal hunger strike. I was upset. That was one time I got upset, like, come on. And then it was just, all right. And I was fine, like, just I stayed there, and then they basically, the doctors would tell you, the nurses, just say, they want to hear you say it and, like, believe it, that, I won't go to Starbucks and get, I promise. They want to, like, you just got to say the right things to them. That's kind of what they were telling me, like, not, to, like, to trick the guy, but they want, you know, believe that. So, anyway, I ended up staying 17 days.
Whoa.
And... you know, lost a lot of weight, ate pretty well. The food there at UCLA was good. I never did any of the, you know, any of the therapy sessions. I just felt I didn't need it. I made a mistake. I wasn't addicted to pills like I am now, Klonopin. No, but I didn't have that. I wasn't a cutter. I mean, I was around like people who had mental problems, like issues, like more serious issues than me, I think. And I just didn't want to do it. Arts and crafts and sit and talk. It's like...
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
What kind of art? What do you have against
arts and crafts?
I'm sorry,
Matt. You said no to arts and crafts?
Are we talking about macrame?
Someone offers you arts and crafts.
Macaroni and rubber cement?
Popsicle stick birdhouse? Because that's something you should have done.
You don't see a good thing...
She had an easel and everything.
Oh, my God, an easel.
Yes.
You need to go back.
Watercolors.
You need to go back.
Because I'll go with you
ridiculous.
And do the arts and crafts.
Yeah, Matt's way manic. Look at him.
I can be, sure.
I mean, yeah. I'm sure some people go there like every couple years. They have returned.
Yeah.
Because I talked to these girls there.
Yeah.
That other patients. And they said, yeah, I come every couple years. You know, they have problems. People have issues, you know. And you never know because some of these people look like regular people.
Yeah.
And, you know, some people you go, okay, this guy. Or maybe not. You can't even tell. So by doing this show, what I've learned is that I get a lot of feedback, Twitter and email, from people who like went through the same thing I'm going through or know somebody. Mm-hmm. But most people, it's like, hey, I went through that. I'm getting the emails from, not saying everybody. But that seems to be a consistent thread, is like, thanks for telling that story.
Well, it helps people feel they can be okay, or it's nice for people to know that they're not alone, or that someone else is even just talking about it publicly is helpful to them, because
it helps.
It just gives them a connection point so they don't feel as isolated.
But you know, going back to the thing, do I feel that pressure? I don't want to be some spokesman, honestly, for like, hey, a group of
No.
I mean, I'll speak to groups, but I didn't do this, and to like be that champion of that mental illness, but I do appreciate that I'm helping people, and I do think it is a rough balance, because not a rough balance, but I do think about, money. It would be cool. I don't think about, hey, I need to buy a big house. If I was to say, you know, I'd like to get a nice car. I've never bought a car before. It'd be mm-hmm. cool to be able to get a hybrid or something, sure. something cool or whatever. And then I always, for some reason, I see myself being in a condominium somewhere like on Ventura Boulevard or somewhere that I would be happy.
Cause you're free.
Yeah.
Free falling.
That's true. Tom Petty, yep. Encino. I don't know where, but he says Reseda. Got yep. a freeway running through my yard.
Yeah,
got
yeah.
back, living in Reseda. I went to Reseda High School.
Did you really?
Yeah. I went to Reseda High School, and, you know, I was a big, you know, issue with me growing up until maybe Seattle. It's like, because Reseda was always, I always call it the New Jersey of the Valley. But growing up, it was just other schools or other people. Oh, you went to Reseda? It was known as like a trashy school, kind of. You know, no money, north of the Boulevard, Ventura Boulevard. There wasn't.
North of the Boulevard.
That's what they would call it. So it kind of had a bad.
Did you perform in the hospital all for people? Where are you from?
I'm from a moon of Jupiter. Europa, sixth closest moon to Jupiter, gas giant.
Oh, there are some crazy. Well, one girl jumped me. I talked
Titan
about it.
Might have life.
You got it.
Push.
Well, I do. See, I can get on that cadence roll.
Everyone's got a Brody impersonation, but it's a loving Brody.
I take it in a good way, and I'm okay with it. I'm fine with people.
If you
doing
go on iTunes, look up the Benson Interruption. I don't know what. Look for Brody's name and my name, but
we did one together,
and I was co-interrupting with Doug, and it just devolved into 4 minutes of all three of us doing you.
You got it. Push. I got to come up with some new sayings pretty soon, but. I think I remember people said I talked funny growing up. Hey, are you from New York? They always thought I was from New York. Just never been, but they always thought I was from New York. And then nobody did impressions of me in high school or not really in college even. I didn't do comedy. I was a baseball player. But a couple guys, you know, I joked with the other pitchers. I had a sense of humor, but I wasn't a performer. And I remember I was eating sunflower seeds, and one of the players said, you look funny when you eat sunflower seeds. So I like started putting things in my head, like little things, like, hey, it's funny when I eat. This kid told me, you know, because you got real reactions from your real honesty from your teammates. So you, and then I got this smile, like I always do that smile. It's like, I smiled as a kid. I was I got picked on for smiling a lot as a kid. But I knew I smiled at a lot. I mean, smiled a lot as a child until it was like beaten out of me from the kids. Like, don't smile. What are you, gay? That's what I got.
I was nicknamed Smiley at baseball.
Yeah, I had that too.
Yeah.
But Smiley in a bad way.
By
where
Trot
I was.
Nixon. Trot Nixon gave me.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Are you from North Carolina?
No, I'm from Boston.
Wait, where is
but,
he from?
He's from North Carolina. Yeah.
I went back. I went way back.
But he was at the.
I know Trot Nixon.
Camp.
I met him.
Good guy.
Hung out with him.
Yep. I hit a triple. Off of him.
He's a hunter. You're hanging out with him, he's a hunter.
He's probably tracking an animal right now.
I bet you he is. Maybe in the northern plains of Michigan.
Hey, wait, when you said a girl in the psych ward jumped you, do you mean jumped you sexually or jumped you aggressively like she wanted?
Aggressively, because, and I talk about it in the show, it was like something about chocolate ice cream. I took her ice cream and she like just reminded me of the girl. Like, she looked like. And we know, I know this is like an inside thing. She kind of looked like Kristen Stewart from, you know, Twilight. She had that look.
I don't think that's that inside. I feel like a lot of people know that.
She looked like John, our stage manager's daughter.
Oh, that inside. I was like, Kristen Stewart's a pretty, she's actually not even in our circle. you meant inside because our stage manager is her dad.
Every day I ask him to let her know that I'm single. That's what I do every day to John.
I love John. He's her dad is so fucking funny.
He's great.
The more I work with John, the more, I mean, it's funny. Like, the more you work with these guys over the years, they trust you more. They start to, like, you get a,
You know, once they mold you, you know, they're in charge. I'm not in charge. Mm-hmm. They're the stage manager. I listen to them. I feed, you know, obviously, you know, you're playing with Chris and those guys. But my point guy is John Stewart or whoever the stage
his
manager
name, his
is.
His name's John Stewart. But it was he's such a sweet guy. And I felt bad because one day we were going to do a question or something about Kristen Stewart. And so I said to John, I was like, John, there's this thing. And I don't, you know, I don't want to be disrespectful. And he's like, my kid's got $100 million. I don't give a shit what you say. Say whatever you want. And I was like, oh my God, I love this guy
and
so much.
And that's when I again say, John, I'm single.
I'm single and I need a lot of guitars.
Does she like chubby writers?
Chubby writers?
Did he open for Fats Domino? Chubby writers.
The chubby writers.
Oh, the chubby writers.
That would
chubby
be good. Writers. No, if yeah. You're the chubby writers.
But so enjoy it. Did it have all the episodes aired yet?
No, January 5th.
January 5th.
Yeah, so you will see, and that's I have four more episodes.
Mm-hmm.
There's four more.
Two a night. Double play.
And I do have my anxiety regarding these next four would be I want to keep the goodwill going that I've mustered up with the help of my editors, of course. It's not just me. I just don't know. It's like I look, people say enjoy it, no pun intended, have fun, sit back in the process, and I'm not, I mean, I don't feel bad. I'm like I said, I'm not depressed or anything, mm-hmm. but I'm not, it's very hard knowing that, because it's each week, it's not, I'm not comparing it to a movie, but you have a movie, you're promoting, boom, it's out, then you kind of like, all right, there it is. I feel like every week with this one, it's the first season, it's different. You know, I just feel like I got to get out there and promote it. So that takes time away.
You should do the Nerdist podcast.
Well, oh yeah, where do I sign? But it's, I don't know if it's, I just feel like I don't know every week. It's kind of like, after this, once this is done, January 5th, I'm going to exhale. I don't care about my half-hour special, what they do. I don't care about edits. You always hear comedians say, hey, I don't care. I don't like how they... I don't care. I just want to get through this, breathe, because whatever I do next, I don't want to fight. I don't want to argue. Mm-hmm. I don't want to feel like I have to win people over. I just want to be Brody, nice guy. Hopefully people know me. And I don't... Instead of having one-third of the audience who gets me, I'll take two-thirds. That will be the thing. So I just don't want to have to... prove. Just let me stay in the, just keep doing what I'm doing. And I feel like I'm not there yet. I don't want to celebrate because I feel like, hey, I got four more episodes. It's pretty heavy stuff. I don't want to do heavy stuff like this for a while, if ever again.
Yeah.
But then again, you know what? It's actually not that heavy. And that's me being too close to it. Me being in my head, having anxiety, all that stuff. So I just want to get through this. And I tell my friends, I tell everybody, it's like, just let me get to January 5th and let me breathe. And then it'll all be out there. All these things that I had concerns about, like how I look, what they think about my beard or this. I mean, I talked about things so far on this show that, on the TV show that, I'm not saying it's like completely out of my system and it healed me, but... It's 50% better.
Yeah.
You know, it feels a lot better. So there's still a couple more things. I want to kind of just get it all out there. And it's like, okay, that's who I am. Now we're good. Now I'll get back to positive energy. Yes, you got it.
I love that. I love that. You're bearing all this shit about yourself. And you're like, I wonder how my beard looks.
Well, that's what goes through my head. You know, that's the craziness that I think a lot of people think that, and then you think about being on TV and you see all these people, a perfect beard, and I think about it, do I? It's like you start, okay, you're going, you're thinking, and then it's like, Brody, go on a walk, go on a hike, get out of your head a little bit. So it's just a lot of things, you know, these are just, I have everything I'm going through or everything I'm feeling has probably been felt by, you know, I'm not, but it is a unique, it is a unique situation to me.
Well, it's fun to feel special, but it's also fun to feel a part of something.
Not alone.
Not alone. Yeah. To feel like, oh, I'm unique in a way, but I'm also not isolated. I'm connected to other people through this experience.
I'm saying unique in a sense that going through this show, it's not like, you know, it's not Brody Sketch Show Presents. It's like, I'm burying myself and it's freaking hard, you know, but I went for it. You know, I took this show, I threw it all out there, really pushed. And the editors have done a great job. The writers, Joe Wagner, Tom Sharp, Mike Gibbons,
love
Zach, the editors.
Wagner, everyone's Tom name. Sharp, love
and them. We fought. I'm telling you, I fought with Wagner. I to this day, and you know, it's strained. There's relationships strained as a result of making this show, which is probably, you know, it could be a good thing actually, because it's a wake up call for some people. Maybe it's a wake up call for me for, hey, the next production, if I do, or if I'm lucky enough to do something. We're going to have ground rules on paper set so everyone kind of, we don't go through this, we don't need to go in the red zone. We're over 40, or I say that to me, but no need to. So it's all about learning. And I know some people I had problems with, I keep track on them, and I know they've kind of, you know, sometimes conflict is good. I, you know, it's just a weird thing. It's just, you just learn from it. That's all. You got to learn, you know, and it was hard. It was hard.
That's the best thing you can do.
It's
the best thing you can do is learn and try not to repeat mistakes.
I don't want to repeat.
And make new and innovative mistakes and then learn from those.
Yeah,
and
then you keep going. Yeah, make
share
mistakes.
Those with other people and hopefully they benefit from
your
fuck ups.
Can't wait to see what sort of new mistakes I make in 2014.
Well, but you will, and we all will, and that's just part of it, you know? But as long as you can.
But you don't want to keep making the same mistake. Right.
No.
You want to make new mistakes.
Yeah, new, brand
create
new mistakes.
Trailblaze
yeah.
mistakes.
Mistakes no one's ever thought of.
At least that represents growth.
It's true.
Exactly.
I mean,
thank you.
You're always going to make mistakes no matter what you do. You're always going to fuck something up, and that's okay. There are the things you won't fuck up.
I mess myself up. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Well, I wish you a good 2014. And I'm so happy that you're feeling better, and I hope that this new pulling yourself off the Klonopin and are you going to be on something else? Or
No, I mean, I take Lamictal. I take the safety net. It's a mood stabilizer. It's the number one bipolar maintenance medication.
Side effects may include nipple droppage.
Who makes that? A Pfizer? Who makes that?
Could be Pfi or GlaxoSmithKline. I don't know.
I want to be one of these drug companies.
But I take that.
Side effects may include eye farting and tongue removal.
Eye farting would be, I don't know if I'd take it. If the eye farting was a...
I get an eye twitch once in a while, like a spasm.
Well, I do too, but I don't even think that's related to the
medication.
But
I will say this, Chris, working, help, and that's not even work. Coming down, you know, being at midnight, it helped me out. It gave me more confidence to walk around and say that, hey, I've been a part of at midnight. That feels good to say that, you know, and I see the buzz, I hear it, and... So I want to say thank you for that.
Oh, please. Thank you.
You know, so don't, you know, you've helped in my recent, you know, growth. Yeah, I just like, it's fun vibe over there.
Side effects may include lung vomiting and diarrhea, which is a shitting on both genders.
We'll see Brody Stevens, at least you and I will, on January 6th.
You got it.
January
I'll be
6th.
There swiping on the lot.
And enjoy it, Comedy Central. Brody Stevens, thank you for coming on. I'll see you in a week and a half.
Yeah.
2 weeks.
I'll be
week
there.
And a half.
My call time is, I think, 4 o'clock. I'll
nice. Good call time. We got a half-hour chit-chat a little while before they load in the audience.
Load in the audience.
I love
and,
it.
We'll give you a little time with them before we come out and start the thing.
15
to
25
minutes.
15
to 25
minutes
would be good,
yep.
James.
It's really...
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, and this is a great time here, guys.
And for your sake, I hope they don't split the 818 area code, because that would really fucking
ruin. Are they talking about that?
Well, it's a lot of people out there.
Oh.
It's a lot.
I got to go talk to my congressman.
All right.
Matt, you have a soothing voice.
Thank you, Brody. I appreciate that. I think America also appreciates that.
Oh, you should say enjoy it, so then we can end the show. We can end the show the way that we normally end the show.
Okay.
Ready?
Enjoy it.
Your burrito.
That doesn't really make sense as a sentence.
Why?
Enjoy it, your burrito.
Well, I was saying enjoy it, dot,
yeah,
dot,
I get
dot,
what you were trying
burrito.
To do.
It was basically just,
I got
but
it.
I feel like with Brody's cadence, we could even just
you
get
think,
a nice enjoy your burrito out of it.
Oh, you're saying double. That could
I'm
be too
saying.
Much Brody. See, that's where it could be too much Brody. I like it crisp. I'm willing to, you know, spitball it.
I wanted to take the catch. I wanted to take the catchphrase of the show and then, like, just.
Yeah, you know what you do? You say to Brody, you say, here's a burrito. And then he'll say enjoy it. And
but
it'll
then,
be like a flip. We'll flip it. Because we're not saying the catchphrase anyway, because you're throwing an extra word in there.
Okay, so here's what we'll do. We'll have Kyle from the corner shout out, hey, here's a burrito, and we'll all say enjoy it.
Okay.
Oh, okay, ready?
I like that.
Kyle.
Hey, guys, here's a burrito.
Enjoy it!
That was really good.
That's how you end a show.
Yeah.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
Are you tired of dating assholes? Do you want a Prince Charming? If so, we're filming a reality show. Sign up here.
12 American women are flown over to the UK for a bachelor-style reality dating show.
There are so many questions about a show like this because it's so odd.
These women have been told that they were going to be dating the world's most eligible bachelor, Prince Harry.
What? Y'all playing with me, right?
You can binge The Bachelor of Buckingham Palace exclusively on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts or the Wondery app.